What? Who? That doesn't make any sense.
Evergreen.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 13, Just Say No. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. I'm glad that we have reached the episode title that I think every post-80s show was obligated to use at least once in its run. Here we are.
We are.
Do they have an episode called No Glove, No Love?
Probably. I mean, on this show, maybe not. It's hard to say. Yeah. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what is happening on our Patreon this week. Episode 34 of Again With This is dropping February 12th. It is Let's Watch Carol Potter. Yes, Carol Potter, a.k.a. Cindy Walsh, in The Neighborhood. This is a 1982 TV movie about a black family moving into a white neighborhood in Brooklyn, or some of the synopses say Queens. I guess we'll find out which it is when we watch it. And the white people who live there, handling that like reasonable adults. Just kidding, they're horrible bigots, but maybe everyone learns a lesson. We'll find out. And in a bonus 90210 tie-in, Christine Samantha Sanders Belford is in it also, which is exciting. So we'll link that in the show notes so that you can watch it ahead if you wish. And if you want to listen to us talk about it, you can join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. Once again, that is the episode dropping February 12th. Now, on to this episode. Just say yes to just say no. Starting with our C-plot, Joe is really at a loss as to how to get her baby back from Kimberly. Yes, the A-plot has been demoted to the C-plot. Again, that is just how bonkers this season actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Michael has come back from wherever he was in the last episode and is understandably confused about how there is a baby now living in his house and is just kind of annoyed by Kimberly's evasiveness as opposed to like concerned about the provenance of this child. Which is a weird, I mean, it's, I guess, not that weird for him. He's just kind of mad about stuff all the time, but whatever. It doesn't matter what his reaction is because she does not care.
Yeah. I mean, I think it tracks. I think he understands that she is insane and he kind of just has to roll with it. And I think he also has probably made it clear that the baby, should there be one, will be her deal.
That's fair, sure.
It was like you about the dog before the dog actually showed up. They were like, that's a DP, not a TP. So, yeah, I mean, that totally tracked for me and also is hilarious because it's very easy in this plot line for things to get like really dark and heavy and weird. And that Michael is just like, fucking Kimberly, like maybe some notice, like that's his issue. Just makes me laugh. I think it's a smart choice, actually.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, you're right that he could have just decided, like, she waited for me to go out of town and then she bought a baby from someone.
Yeah.
It's none of my business. I do not want to know.
Even though it's his house and his wife, he's like, you know what? Fine. Whatever.
When Michael peels out to deal with Jane business that we'll deal with in the B plot, we see that Joe is staking out the beach house in her car and sits back up only after Michael is gone. And she tries to knock, but if she thought she was going to just bully Maria into handing the baby over, too bad, Kimberly is there. And Kimberly tries again to gaslight Joe about her stillborn baby who was totally stillborn and died. You know, Kimberly delivered it, and Joe signed the death certificate, blah, 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 blah. But when Joe tries to make threats, Kimberly is not intimidated. Clip two.
You hand him over or I'll have your ass in jail so fast. You're insane. I really don't think you're gonna get away with this, do you? That is my baby in there, Kimberly. You don't have a baby. I do now. Now get the hell off my property. People just don't do what you're doing. My God, you're a doctor! going to get him back. No matter what I have to do.
You say that.
I mean, Kimberly is right. Possession is 9/10 of the law.
I also love that in a plot line involving, like, no, this baby did not die, but like there was a dead baby. It's like, you signed the death certificate, blah, 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 blah. Like, this is where we are in terms of like the sun's level of soapiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, brain transplant, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, sorry to Mrs. Cortez and to baby boy or girl Cortez.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, like, that's the most ridiculous part is Kimberly being like, I will throw you in jail. Like, no, you won't. And even if you do, it's going to be the Carters pursuing something, as you rightly pointed out in the last episode, Sarah, not you. Like, this is, even if Joe does get it back, it's, as far as the courts are concerned, not Joe's baby legally.
I mean, this whole thing is so bonkers. And it's
really
like, this is how you chose to dispose of this pregnancy.
Yeah.
That, okay, the verb dispose was not the right one, and I apologize.
No, but I know what you mean.
But you know what I'm saying.
I do. Yeah. So later at the hospital, Joe is sounding real crazy with hospital clerk, hey, it's that Kenneth Tiger. Clip 3.
Miss Reynolds, please. I assure you, the hospital records are in order. This is a copy of your baby's death certificate.
You're not listening to me. It's for the wrong baby. My baby didn't die. Somebody else's baby died.
All right. Assuming that's the case, if you give me the other birth mother's name, I will check her records.
I don't know the name.
Then I'm afraid I can't help you.
Fine. If you won't find the records, I will.
Miss Reynolds, I think that your problem falls outside my area of expertise. Maybe Dr. Shaw could recommend somebody you could talk to.
Like a shrink? Yeah, right. You listen to me. I got news for you. I am not the one at this hospital with a screw loose. You got that?
It's not me. The damn doctor's around here. What are you looking at?
She's from New York, folks. Jesus.
I understand your frustration, but this is not going to get you what you want. You know, it's like yelling at someone on the phone when you call with a customer service complaint. Like, this doesn't solve your problem.
No.
I mean, it's not like that. It's a crazy version of that, but you know what I mean?
I mean, I actually sort of thought, like, why am I finding this? Why am I finding her in this plot line frustrating? And it's like, I feel like, first of all, Kimberly is very effectively not just gaslighting her, but like being so, former President Trump was excellent at this, like just being such an asshole that eventually you just like explode with rage and then nothing ends up happening to the actual perp.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, they annoy you past the point of effectuality. And I think that's what's driving me crazy about this plot line, that it's like, Joe, just shoot her.
Right. Yeah.
Not that I advocate homicide, but
certainly not.
I mean, it's probably best for everyone, but we'll get to it.
I mean, you also don't advocate parenthood. So like, there's a lot of problems with this plot line, frankly.
Well, yes, I certainly don't advocate there being parenthood in soap operas. Like, please no. Like, don't do it.
Anyway, Joe goes back to the beach house where the baby's crying is audible from the street. The neighbors must also love this bundle of joy's arrival in their lives. So Joe pounds on the door. Kimberly yells at her to get lost, saying she's already called the cops. Joe stomps around to the patio doors, which are locked, and they briefly yell through them at each other until Joe picks up a metal chair and smashes the door with it. And she actually looks really terrifying before she walks through. You can see this in the visual aids. And the baby they found is actually really cute. He's 6 months old.
He is.
But he is cute.
He's super cute.
Yeah. And as Joe leans over the bassinet to pick him up, the cops bust in and Kimberly puts on a performance of hysteria about her baby. And one cop takes the baby from Joe and hands it to Kimberly. And then they both cuff Joe while she, you know, goes nuts. And Kimberly even tries to get them not to cuff Joe since she's a patient. She's just going through a hard time. Kimberly doesn't even want to press charges as long as Joe just stays away. But one assumes this is not over. But that's where we leave it for today. On to the B plot. Time to return to Vegas to rescue a hostage. Michael is in the middle of yelling at Kimberly about the baby, as we discussed, when Jane calls to let him know Chris has run off to Vegas with all of their money. She called the cops, but since she made him a signatory on the bank account, legally there's nothing they can do. Because of course there isn't. LOL, Jane. This is why you don't do shit like this. Duh.
Background check.
Yeah, for starters. So yeah. Michael briefly yells at her for being a horny pushover, which, fair, before snapping that he is going to go to the cops himself. And we never see him do this because, again, there's nothing they can do. There's no point. So Chris has decided to drive to Las Vegas in the limo, which is where we rejoin him and Sydney, who seems more pissy about the inconvenience of being kidnapped than afraid that this man is going to rape her again. She tells him that as soon as they get to Vegas, she's going to go to the cops. And then he hands her another jewelry box, and it's a diamond necklace. And once she sees it, she obviously wants it. Don't love this color on Sydney, but I'm also not surprised. And in their hotel room, Sydney paces. Chris claims that she can leave whenever she wants, but he doesn't think that she will. And he is right. She doesn't. Plopping down and saying she doesn't even like him. And he tries to cajole her into admitting she does, or at least that she likes his money. And once again, she asks about Jane. And once again, he is rude, but also I kind of get it. Clip 4.
She doesn't exactly raise my flag, Sydney. She's a nice girl, but not good. You're good. Real good. Give me a second chance. I'll take you out to the best dinner in town. We'll drink the best wine. And I saw this incredible shop downstairs in the lobby. I'm sure we can find you a special dress to wear. Of course, if you'd prefer to call the police.
Well, I could look at the dresses first.
Sydney.
I mean, here's the thing, though. The whole tone of this... Like, I think it's actually, like, it could have worked that she's sort of, like, you know, falls in love with the, like, gets Stockholm syndromed by Chris.
Right.
Fine. Except that he has been such a convincing, rapey creep up to this point that you can't just turn it into this opposites attract and they're, like, locked in a car together rom-com from the 80s.
Right. He's not you can't Chuck Bass him. In other words.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, like, part of me was like, okay, look at the dresses first. Ha ha, pretty woman. But you can't, like, it's too much has happened already.
Yeah.
So this is really frustrating. And also, it's just frustrating as a big Sydney fan to, like, that there's always this ceiling that she hits of doing the right thing. And then she's like, shopping. Like, oh, honey, please help us help you.
But at the same time, I think Laura Layton almost gets us there by convincingly portraying the idea that, like, Sydney thinks this is all she deserves. And
yeah,
so
no, she, totally agree.
She's just going to take what she can get from this guy while she can. And
yeah,
then
totally agree.
Damn the consequences. And honestly, like, even though she has Jake in her life right now, like, Jane, there's no point in her trying to really appeal that hard to, like, I have to be loyal to my sister. At this moment.
Yeah.
Because Jane has been pushing her away, you know, all season, really. Including when Sydney did try to really do the right thing and tell her the truth about Chris. And Jane was just like, I don't believe you. And you are trying to do this to hurt me. So.
Yeah. Which Chris exploited. And I think Laura Layton also does a good job at, like, showing Sydney kind of respecting that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, this is part of why Sydney is my favorite, but also, like, in this familial way where I want to slap her upside the head. That
yeah.
Layton really does a great job with this that is sort of better than the format deserves, but
Yeah.
I'm glad she bothered. Thanks, girl.
Mm-hmm. So one cut later, a shop settee is covered in very Vegas-y dresses, shoes, and accessories, and Sydney is yelling from the dressing room that the look she's trying on costs more than her car. Chris says he'll worry about that, and Sydney looks content to let him, and even more content to strut out and model for him. Sydney, do not let him win this easily, but I, as we said, I get it. Mm. And we later see them having the time of their lives at the craps table, Sydney in her new dress and now also a fur stole. He offers to give her a turn, and when she pouts that she only has $50, he hands her a stack of chips, and she says it's $20,000. Apparently, she asks if he isn't afraid that she will bolt, but he rhetorically asks how many prospectors leave a gold mine and then wins again. Back in L.A., Michael's waiting at Jane's door when she and her tiny rib cardigan get home from work. I don't know why she's bothering, but she is. Michael has a theory about what's happening. Clip 5.
You and your fiancé. He makes off with $500,000. You cry foul. But 6 months from now, you disappear too.
Michael, my business is on the verge of bankruptcy. I don't have time for your little fantasies. That's what your wife is for, excuse me.
No, I think I want to talk to you, if you don't mind.
Michael!
Jane? Hey, you all right?
Yeah. Michael was just leaving.
Have you heard from Sydney?
No, I haven't. And I guess you haven't either, have you? I hate to say I told you so, Jake.
Wait, don't tell me Sid's flown the coop, too.
She hasn't shown up for work the last 2 days.
Jane, I'm sorry, you have my sincere apologies. You're not in cahoots with that Aussie. Your loony sister is.
You don't know that.
No, isn't it just like Sid to make a play for your latest fling, help him steal our money, and then ride off into the sunset?
Hey, hold on. Chris is scum, and I wouldn't put anything past him, but Sydney, she tried to warn Jane about this guy.
What can I say? He had me fooled.
Yeah, just like Sid's got you fooled, Jake.
I mean, at least Jake listens to her.
Yeah, true. But Michael's theory is like, I wish that had been the case. That makes sense. Like that would have been the play if.
Yeah. Jane... And then we could enjoy watching Sydney like get massages and eat nothing but chocolate covered strawberries for like 3 days and play with her umbrella drinks. Like, but this is rapey and it's not fun.
No.
Yeah.
No. So it's, in the suite.
It really is too bad. The actor really could have made hay out of a less sinister version of the story, but oh well.
Sadly, that's not what they went with. So in the suite, as you indicated, Sydney is letting herself be seduced by the amenities, getting a massage and having an umbrella drink handed to her by an unseen waiter. Chris comes back from a good run at the tables and says he would like to be the one to give her a massage. She tartly says that's not part of their bargain. I was not aware that she could refuse certain acts, but okay. Mm. And later she's happy eating chocolates and drinking champagne that she doesn't notice how much worse a mood Chris is in when he returns from more gambling and obliviously yammers at him about taking her on a hot air balloon ride. But of course, he lost. She's not worried. He'll win again. So balloon. But he's like, no, I lost it all. And then he grabs her face and roughly kisses her. And this is the first that Sydney's hearing that the money he's been spending is Jane's. And she's aghast. So Chris points out that she's implicated with the dress and jewelry she's currently wearing. She starts to take it off so she can flee, except the necklace, which is the only thing that he demands. And he pulls his arm so far back before slapping her in the face. She threatens to call security, but she can't get to the suite door fast enough and barricades herself in the bathroom. And on the other side of the door, he says he will be back and that she had better be there. But because it's Vegas, there's a phone in the bathroom, which she uses to call Jake at Shooters and tell him where she is. And he immediately says he's going to come and get her. But first he calls Jane and reports what he knows and they make plans to go together. So Sydney's still in her gown and future American Queer as Folk and 13 Reasons Why star Robert Gant is in the suite dropping off food in his capacity as the room service waiter he is playing when Jake shows up. And Sydney leaps into his arms, gasping that it was so terrible, which is kind of undercut when waiter Gant asks her to sign for the order and Jake goggles at how much it's for. She explains that Chris tried to starve her to make her do what he wanted, so she ordered food when he went to the casino. But Jake is already suspicious. Clip 6.
And for a kidnapping victim, you look pretty good. Where'd you get those diamonds?
Oh, look, I know I have a lot of explaining to do, but can it wait? I'm just so glad to be back in your arms.
Although she literally isn't, because he looks extremely dubious about everything and is not actually touching her back as she hugs him. It's one of those one-sided hugs.
Back on his chest is really more like it. Yeah.
So downstairs, Michael and Jane find Chris at a table, and Jane snaps that he's done gambling with her money. But unfortunately for them, all like, that's left is $5,000. Their first assumption is that he's lying, but when he tells them to go ask a pit boss, Jane lunges at him, and then Michael pulls her away and does so himself. But Chris, who has the advantage of being like a head taller than Thomas Calabro, just grabs Michael by the neck, slams his head on the edge of the table, and drops him to the floor. Back to the suite, Jake works the phone trying to find them a flight back while Michael, who has recovered in the interim, bitches about how much money Chris spent on accommodations. Sydney has complaints as well. Clip 7.
Jane, it was horrible. It was a total nightmare.
You really expect us to believe you were kidnapped looking like that?
Yes. I was brought here against my will, snatched off the streets of West Hollywood by that maniac, an embezzler.
But forced to wear designer clothes and diamond jewelry. I don't think so.
I did what I had to do to stay alive.
Well, you never looked better. Food's not bad either.
Fine. You want me to take a lie detector test?
There's a flight every hour on the half hour. We can go standby.
Good. Jake, I want to go home now.
Are you guys ready?
No, I'm going to take some time to sort things out. You guys go ahead.
I think I'll hang around, too.
Jane, I'm really sorry about your money. I just wish you'd listen to me about Chris.
Goodbye, Sydney.
Well...
What can you say?
Yeah, there's something to say. Okay, I will also note, I believe it's this scene where they're starting to leave and then Sydney pauses to grab the stole off of a bust.
Yes.
Like, that's my girl.
Yeah.
Jesus. So
as Jake leaves, Jane draws that she can't believe that he's falling for this. He replies he's not falling for anything. He just doesn't see any reason to stay in town. Question, where is Chris right now? Like, he just left the casino and is at large.
Also, it's been a while since I've been to Vegas, but it's not my recollection that pit bosses really love, like, assaults taking place on the gambling floor.
No. And I really, really, really hate how they're blurring the lines as to how much of a victim Sydney actually is. Like, not the characters, because I understand, I mean... I don't, but I get why they are all suspicious about her and what her part in this is. But I mean the writers.
Right. Well, that's what I was saying before, that they're sort of turning this into a, Sydney caper. And it's like, I mean, he raped her and extorted her.
Yes. And I know that this is just to set up, you know, whatever's going to her and Jake falling apart. But I hate that this is how it's happening.
Yeah. Same.
So Michael and Jane decide to take their remaining $5,000 to the roulette table. He does not feel like playing, but at her urging, he tells her to put it on black for his mood. They lose. Jane cracks up. He can't believe that she's laughing, but she just asks how it feels to own 50% of nothing. Which, like, what, again, what can you say?
Yeah.
So they go back to raid Chris's mini bar, sitting close on the couch. She comments that at least he has Kimberly, but he makes some rueful noises about that. She asks whether there's trouble in their marriage already. So he tells her about this mystery baby that has come along and strained their relationship. And Jane has no follow-up questions about that. It's like, oh, mystery baby. Sure, that happens all the time. What? But instead,
go ahead. Is this going to be an ongoing thing in the Melroseverse where people hear like just lunatic stuff, but once they realize Kimberly's involved, they're like, oh, obviously.
Maybe, yeah.
It's so, like the one family member we have that's like, oh, which cousin was it? Kelly? Yeah. Say no more. Please, say no more.
So Jane just says that Michael was a lousy husband, so maybe he'll be a better father. And Lynn leans in and kisses him because she wanted to see what it felt like to be the other woman for once. And, you know, it escalates from there. Mm-hmm. The next morning, Michael wakes up to Jane out of bed and getting dressed. She thanks him for last night. She needed to be with someone. And then he... Clip 8.
Why don't you come on back here and take off your clothes, or I could take them off for you.
God damn it, Mancini! Why gotta do that shit? It's rude. It's rude to me. Yeah. I feel attacked.
It is rude.
But, you know, she's ready to go. He rushes to stop her, but she tells him that was a one-night stand. And he tries to argue about it. It was a new beginning for them. He loves her, but she says goodbye. And with a very avuncular cheek pinch, she is gone. And that's where we leave them. Finally, the A plot. The plot against Bruce reaches its very grim conclusion.
My God.
Allison tries to keep a low profile walking into work because she overslept, but she runs into Bruce, who's been looking for her. She immediately makes with the excuses and promises, but he just wanted her to hear it from him that he fired Amanda. He'll be forming a new team and Allison will have a lot more responsibility. Again, Bruce, this is maybe part of the reason why you're about to not have a company anymore. But
exactly what my notes said. Yeah.
She says she's ready and goes straight from there into Amanda's office, where Amanda is noisily packing. Allison tries to say farewell, but it goes badly. Clip 9.
I just heard the news. I want you to know how sorry I am.
You're such a hypocrite, Allison. I don't know how you do it with a straight face.
I beg your pardon?
If you've come to gloat, at least have the guts to say how you really feel. And deep down, aren't you glad that Bruce fired me? Maybe even elated?
Don't tell me how I feel.
This probably calls for a celebration. Of course, you'll use any excuse to have a drink. What was it this morning?
OJ, straight up.
Screwdriver's more like it. Smell it on your breath. It's not even lunchtime and you're already into happy hour.
Fine. You want to know how I feel? I feel great because you finally got what you deserved. You have manipulated me and Billy and our relationship.
I refuse to take the blame for your pathetic mess of a life. I promoted you. I stuck by you despite your monumental personal problems.
The truth is, I am better on 2 double vodkas than you are at your best.
Tell that to the next poor kid you run over.
Oh! Enjoy.
Yeah.
Enjoy never winning another argument for the rest of your life, Allison.
Oh my
Trump
God.
Card.
So good.
So Allison then finds Bruce in the conference room. As a prelude to their working more closely together, she starts listing the campaigns that she thinks Amanda didn't give her enough credit for, and Bruce is assuring her that things will be better now when the phone rings with bad news. A consortium of doctors bought such a big piece of the agency that Bruce is no longer the majority shareholder. Bruce, however, pronounces it consortium, which may be another reason he is about to lose his business. Spoiler.
Oh, Bruce.
I'm sorry, but...
I mean, he's not good at this.
No.
Any of it.
No. I mean, let's go all the way back to the Chaz era. Like, Bruce just has bad judgment. It's a fact. Anyway.
As we're about to see, terminally bad.
Yes. So neither Allison nor Bruce can imagine what doctors could want with D&D, but Bruce will find out at a board meeting the next day. So at the meeting, Peter has sent some lawyer-looking dude to say his clients don't want to get involved in day-to-day operations, but they do intend to have a say in management. Okay, I backed it up to Bruce's last scene to confirm he did say it was a board meeting, which he did. So I'm not sure why Billy and Allison are present. They're on the board. Like, words have meanings, writer. Jesus Christ. Like,
yeah,
there's
have
no
them
reason.
Eavesdropping outside like would happen in real life.
Come exactly. On. But anyway, Bruce tries to maintain control with this overture. Clip 10.
Well, I'm sure we can find some middle ground here. My present team, Allison Parker, Billy Campbell, Ray Stevens, have built up a tremendous amount of goodwill with the clients.
Oh, have they?
Ray Stevens, the
Ray
streak?
Ray Stevens, as in the streak?
I mean, yes, Allison and Billy also suck, but Ray Stevens works at D&D?
Ray Stevens talking streaker talk with his streaker friends.
I mean, that's why I clipped that.
Sometimes a campaign requires some nudity.
True. Anyway, back to the scene. The lawyer says the team his people have in mind also have great relationships with D&D clients. And then the door dramatically opens and in walk Peter. And his hair in this scene is so smug. You can see in the visualites.
It's very big, as is his suit jacket.
Yep. And of course, with him, Amanda. And this occurs, clip 11.
Our apologies for being late. I had an emergency at the hospital. You're looking well, Bruce. You must be following doctor's orders.
Peter.
I can answer your question, Bruce. Yes, I am part of the consortium that bought D&D. Actually, I put it together myself. And it's no secret that Amanda and I are friends. I also have a great respect for her professional abilities, so I'm sure I don't have to tell you why I'm appointing her president of D&D effective immediately.
You can't do this to me.
I have the votes. I can do whatever I want.
I've got a knife sticking in my back, thanks to you.
Bruce, you have just gone through an unpleasant divorce. You're recovering from a heart attack. You need this time to get your life back on track. Look at this as an opportunity.
Rotten hell, Amanda.
Oh, rot in hell, Amanda. The last we hear from Bruce. Spoiler. Justified. So Bruce obviously tears ass out of there, and Amanda serenely takes over, as it were, saying she wants the transition to be as smooth as possible, and she'll have an announcement in a day or two. To get the ball rolling, she's promoting Billy to VP of accounts. He started working there several episodes into this season, and this is only episode 13, but okay. Like, even Billy looks like he thinks this is out of line.
Yeah, to his credit, he's like, huh?
Yeah. So Amanda asks to see him outside. He goes as Amanda tells Allison they'll deal with her later. And in the hall, Amanda claims that Billy deserved his promotion, which they have not even bothered to show him coming up with like one idea. This is really rich. But
it's Billy.
That too. But evidently, she's only doing this so she can make him fire Allison, which is, she does. Allison's a drunk and it's affecting her work. But this makes no sense. Like, Amanda, having gotten the power, she would relish firing Allison. She's been dying to. She already did it once, I'm pretty sure. Or tried to.
Well, and she's, like, I mean, she's still trying to torture Allison.
Yeah.
Because of the Chaz thing, and was like, don't bother quitting. I'll just give you a shitty wreck. So,
Right. Yeah. But whatever, Billy pushes back, citing the issues that Allison's gone through this season and generally. But Amanda snits that Allison's been going through a hard time since Amanda met her, and she doesn't give a fuck anymore. And Billy then just says he doesn't think he can do it, and Amanda chirps that he can, and he has 24 hours to do it. And at home that night, Susan and Billy celebrate. Clip 12.
To Billy Campbell, the Al Gore of D&D.
Not how that works.
No. Are you really that stupid?
Not how that works.
What college did Allison and Susan go to? I would like to know.
To Susan, the Spiro Agnew of political references. Girl, shut up.
Yeah.
Go cook something.
Billy looks miserable and admits his promotion is because of Allison. Susan reminds him that they weren't going to talk about her tonight, but he explains how his joy comes at her expense. And Susan wearily says it was Amanda's decision to fire Allison and Billy didn't do anything. And he comes back at her with this, clip 13.
Yeah, but I feel responsible. I mean, Allison's drinking is my fault. I pushed her into getting married, and when she couldn't commit, I walked out on her.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Thank you.
It's like this week's writer had to like go into the script and insert this to just stick it to last week's writer. Cause
yeah. It's like whoever keeps putting the it's Billy posted in here. Fine here.
But
although I will note Allison's drinking is her own responsibility, but
yes,
the rest
is.
Of it. Yeah.
Right.
You did.
Yep.
You suck.
But Susan is all out of empathy, saying that Allison has been beset by a lot of different people and stressors, and that instead of dealing with them, she's drinking, to your point, Sarah. Yeah. The only way to help Allison is to convince her that she needs help. And Billy kind of chuckles and then lets Susan start kissing on him. So then Allison comes unsteadily into the courtyard just then and, hearing music pouring out of Billy's place, looks up to see Billy and Susan making out by the window. She staggers up to their door and embarrasses herself in clip 14.
Isn't this romantic? What's the occasion? Screw Allison out of a fiancé day? Screw Allison out of a promotion day? Or let's just dump on Allison for the heck of it.
You're drunk.
Not too drunk to know what I'm talking about. You know, Billy, if you had been the one who needed some time to get your life together, I wouldn't be working at your company. Plotting with Amanda behind your back or playing house with your best friend.
I'm gonna make some coffee.
That is so nice. Do I know how to pick fiancés and best friends or what?
Maybe I should just walk you home.
What's your hurry? Guess it's true. Wait, a man's heart is through his stomach.
You're not welcome here. Not when you're like this. I want you to leave.
Oh, sure. No problem. You do probably want to be alone. Oh.
Pulling the tablecloth.
Always wanted to do that. Good night. Sweet dreams.
Most I've ever liked Allison. By a country mile.
I mean, it's awful, but it's good. And then apparently somehow is the only person in the complex to not fall down the friggin' stairs, even though she's in heels and shit-faced.
Waste-o. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I will say Billy is, again, modeling good boundaries.
He's trying.
He is. He's very trying. Thank you.
One commercial break later, Amanda's striding into her office in the morning and immediately gasping in the shock at the sight of Bruce, very deceased, hanging from something. They don't show us what. I assume there's just a drop ceiling in this joint, but whatever. Showman.
That part looks, you know, it's just the actor like resting his chin on a loop.
Sure.
It's very, you know, not realistic, which is good.
Yes. But
I wonder what you thought, and you'll see this in the visual aids. You'll see Amanda's reaction. But like, I wonder if Locklear was warned, like knew generally sort of what was going to happen, but was not expecting to be confronted with that, because her shock and horror seems perhaps outside of the acting. Like, it just struck me as very genuine and horrified. Like,
oh, no.
I think she can't be that good an actor. I'm just saying.
No, I think that was just acting. Like, I think you can't do something like that to an actor on the set because you risk their reaction being like, they would laugh. You know what I mean? Like, I think that was a performance.
Right. Also, I mean, you, especially if you're talking about suicide, like, I don't think it's a great idea to spring that on someone, but I'm just wondering if they're like, okay, so, you know, as you figured out from reading the whole script, Bruce is leaving us, but they didn't tell her exactly how it was going to occur. I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure it is just acting. I should give her more credit, but it's very well done. She looks stricken and nauseated. So,
yeah. I mean, the other reason that just because as I said, I don't think you can predict what the honest reaction is, and you can only get it once. And if it's not what you want, then you fucked it. But
true.
B, I don't think they had time to like experiment with shock.
No.
So
yeah, I agree.
So I think that was probably her.
Also, how long can you expect the actor to, you know, the hanging actor to be
right? Well, yeah.
In that arrangement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Ever the showman, Bruce pinned his suicide note to his sleeve, and on a piece of D&D scratch paper, it reads, "Dear Amanda, ellipsis, congratulations on your promotion, ellipsis, love, Bruce."
At last, he learns to play the game. too late.
Too late. Very feminine handwriting from this PA who wrote this, by the way.
Yeah, I was looking at that. I don't agree.
All right. Well, it's in the visual aid, so you guys
Or my husband has girly handwriting then. It looked enough like Dan's that I was like, yeah, I buy it.
Fair enough. So it's kind of awkward as Bruce's corpse is wheeled out through the bullpen and everyone's just standing there watching it happen. Amanda doesn't seem to realize she could just say nothing instead of this. Clip 15.
I knew Bruce was having trouble coping with his divorce and his heart attack, but I had no idea he was so fragile emotionally.
And if you had known, you wouldn't have stabbed him in the back?
Look, this isn't helping anything.
Amanda wants me to be honest about my feelings, to tell the truth. Well, the truth is, you killed Bruce.
How dare you?
You're way out of line.
This is what you get when you push people too far, Amanda.
I want her out of here. Gone.
I need a little more time.
End of the day, Billy, unless you want to go with her.
Okay, when I was first watching this, she was like, you killed Bruce, and I was like, oh, like so loud. Yeah. Like other creatures in the house came in. Dan's like, what? I'm like, brr, it's cold in here. There must be some Parker in the atmosphere. I mean, she's not totally wrong.
No, she's not totally right either, but yeah. No. But no, but also... this is the last we see of Amanda in the episode. So if you're waiting for a scene where she finds Peter and is like, hey, turns out my misgivings that I was sharing with you throughout this plot were quite well founded and our scheming drove Bruce to his death, you can stop because there isn't one. So,
yeah,
I guess she decided it was all fine in the end, or at least if she had doubts about it, we don't see them.
Yeah. Or it can't be undone, so let's plow ahead. I mean, soaps. Mm.
True. So Billy follows Allison to wherever and says they need to talk about the previous night. She is totally unrepentant, which is funny at first. But then as he describes what she did, she just stares at him. They both realize she actually does not remember what happened because she was blackout drunk at the time. Which makes it even more impressive that she got up and down that spiral staircase in heels. So
yeah.
She just defiantly states that there's no way she did what he's describing, and he suggests that they discuss it over lunch, but she refuses. So instead, Billy goes to the hospital to explain the situation to Matt and also in the process give Matt a thing to do in the episode. And when Matt counsels clients in these circumstances, he says, he tells loved ones to get the addict into a treatment program. Alcoholism is disease, so if Allison is actively seeking treatment, it's illegal for her to be fired over it. And Billy thinks this is his way out of having to fire her, but he'll have to convince her to go into treatment. And Matt has an idea, which is an intervention, which Allison walks into at her apartment after work. Present are Matt, Susan, Billy, and a white-haired guy we have not seen before. Billy introduces him
Ree
as
Stevens. Just kidding.
He is Dr. Katz, so presumably he's a professional therapist. Just kidding. He's from a rehab center called Twin Oaks. What follows is pretty much what you would expect, a confrontational recap of recent low lows that are a consequence of Allison's drinking. She is not receptive. Billy knows that Allison also drank in college, which Allison figures is because Susan's been snitching. And Andrew Hsu tries to make Billy emphatic, but just ends up whining in clip 16.
This is not about us or Susan. This is about you. You are going to lose everything that's important to you. I mean, your job, your livelihood, your friends. It's going to be over if you don't stop drinking. I mean, it doesn't have to be this way, but it's going to be up to you.
Fine. I think I have a drinking problem. I'll deal with it. Matt, good friend that you are, why don't you get me the address of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll go to a meeting.
You cannot do this on your own.
There's a treatment program that's an hour away, Twin Oaks. It's a 28-day program.
Oh, God. Oh, God, how did this happen? How come I can't stop drinking? I'll sign up. I'll do whatever it takes.
Now, Sarah, you are a student of the show Intervention. Was that suspiciously easy?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Like, for her to be like, well, I don't think I even want to stop, which means I probably should, is like, okay. Like, that's, you know, making the silent part out loud, I guess. But, I mean, of course, it's not going to be that simple because this is a soap opera.
Right.
But, yeah. I mean, well acted by her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it
she
did
does
make
go.
Me laugh that the rehab center was Twin Oaks, since the one in my hometown, attended by a couple of famous people, was Fair Oaks.
Oh.
Coincidence? Who knows?
So Matt stops at a gas station on their way to the rehab center, where Billy asks Allison if she's okay. She claims that now that she's said out loud that she has a drinking problem, she feels better and can start dealing with it. She sure seems anxious to be alone, though. She further claims she just has to pee. Billy says he'll go with her, but she says she can do it alone. And of course, she just waits until both Billy and Matt are inside the convenience store to just run away. Like, we don't know where they are. But she then is walking along some random street with apparently no idea where she is, possibly not even with her purse, until she comes upon a bar. And the sight of a couple of dudes walking out of it seems to spook her. And she sits on a bus stop bench and starts sobbing. And in the end, she walks herself into Twin Oaks and says she needs help. Problem solved forever, probably.
I'm sure.
And that's it. Let us close up the episode by naming our MVP. Good grief. Matt, who did something useful with his Masters of Social Work.
I mean, I guess so, because everyone is kind of unvaluable in this.
It's true.
In this episode. So, yeah, I agree with yours, Matt. Okay.
All right. Least valuable player.
Actually, I just remembered we forgot to mention that Matt drives a fucking Geo Tracker, so I'm retracting that most stuff. Okay. And reassigning it to Michael, who really looks foxy in that yellow cable sweater.
Oh, yeah, he does. Okay.
And made me laugh a bunch of times.
And who is your least valuable player?
My least valuable player is the writers who made us, who sort of flipped the script on this Sydney Chris thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that just because Laura Layton can sell that you should make her.
Yeah. I'm going to say Amanda, because Bruce probably would have fucked the company eventually on his own anyway. So she mm-hmm. could have just waited rather than done what she did and driven him to die by suicide, which yeah, I kind of agree really, with Allison. She did kill Bruce in a sense.
Yeah. And it's really true. Like, except for that note, which was like some passive aggressive Southern mother-in-law art. He was not good at this. I don't know how he managed to found this company, but it was time to move on. Like, she could have just let that happen. So. Yep.
And that's it.
Next time on Again With This, Peter turns creepy, Michael learns the truth, Susan moves on, Jeffrey might move in, and Allison forms a bond in rehab. Navally!
Yeah.
You'll be feeling rather seasick when you check out our visual aids, which we do for every episode of Again With This. You'll find them on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and throw on a pair of silver pumps before you hit our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Tons of extra content, so clip-clop on over there today. I'm the Admiral Stockdale of D&D, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is the Geraldine Ferraro of D&D, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is the Hannibal Hamlin of D&D, David T. Cole. talk to you next time.